Hello and welcome to another podcast from Sessions by SE. I'm Aaron and I will be your host today. In the spirit of exploring alumni paths in this season of Sessions, I'm really excited to introduce Alice Yuan. Alice graduated SE in 2016 and has since worked as an Android engineer at Pinterest, an engineering lead at Patreon, an Android consultant, and now is a senior engineer at a New York startup. She also runs a popular blog called Alice in Techland, where she draws comics to humanize the tech industry. She's also a software engineering mentor at CodePath, an NPO dedicated to jumpstarting CS careers for college students. So we're super excited to have you on our podcast, Alice.
Thanks so much, Aaron. I'm very excited as well.
Let's get right into it then. I want to start off at the very, very beginning. When you were making your university choices in grade 12, why SE? Why did you choose our program?
It's actually an interesting story because I was enrolled in an arts program in high school and I actually had to audition to get into art. So there was kind of these two paths ahead of me. Or actually, I was very set on art when I first got into the high school. And over time, I kind of had a lot of second thoughts. Part of it was just the fact that like my parents were very like anti go to an art school for university. And part of it was like my own thoughts of like, you know, I'm not sure if I can do art 24/7 as a living, and I know how much harder it is. So I actually took a computer science class in grade 11. It was one of the first few times that they were running the computer science classes, and I just fell in love with it. We had to like program these like board games and like text-based cribbage and things like that. And I remember being so excited about it that I would go home and immediately start on the homework assignments. So yeah, it felt like after I took that course that it was a no-brainer and I just wanted to go into software for my degree.
You mentioned that you were like super excited to start in the coding assignments as soon as you finished school. Did that same excitement for coding translate when you got into university? Like how did your impression of software engineering change as you got into a university?
Yeah. So to be fully honest, it definitely changed. I think university, especially at Waterloo, especially software engineering, it's a lot of work. It's a huge grind. There's like assignments every single day. I have to like constantly put in like a lot of hours for every single assignment. And I think some of that definitely took away from the enjoyment of software in general. But at the same time, once I like went into these different co-ops and got to experience what felt like working at a tech company, that excitement grew again. So it was definitely like a bit of a roller coaster.
Like in co-op though, what made you excited to do coding again? Like I know that the academic part may not be as enticing for a lot of people, but there's something about the co-op experience that makes you like really love coding. What was that for you?
I think part of it is getting to meet other people and just being able to collaborate with other really bright students. And also, I think part of it is the like getting to learn hands-on experience and getting to problem solve. Like, and also, I think, you know, like when I joined, there was a huge wave happening in tech where it just felt like everything was growing exponentially. And when I interned at Pinterest, it was just like, you know, there were so many millions of users joining every few months, and it just felt like a really exciting experience. So yeah, a lot of that was like hype about being part of that growth trajectory.
So in your software engineering experience, I did notice that you did a lot of like extracurriculars. Like for example, you were part of Women in Tech. And we did a previous podcast actually talking about why extracurriculars are important. But I'm curious, now that you've graduated, like what was extracurriculars important to you? How does it still affect you today?
Yeah, it's funny that you look at my experience and think that I did a lot of extracurriculars, because I actually look at it and I'm like, man, like I didn't do that much. Like I totally could have done more. And I think part of it was the fact that, you know, I was very focused on academics in the beginning and I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to fail. Once that kind of felt less like a thing that I had to worry about. And, you know, to be honest, I think like getting to experience other co-ops and also realizing that like academics isn't everything, I kind of stopped putting as much energy in just purely academics. And so, yeah, like one of my co-op terms, I actually had a friend who did swing dancing and he went to Berkeley and he like decided to take me to Berkeley just so that we can try swing dancing. And I was like, whoa, this is super cool. And I decided to look up whether or not there was a club like that in Waterloo, and there was, and I decided to take part in that swing dance club.
Yeah, I hear this often with the with a lot of our alums. They're saying, like, initially I was super focused in academics. Later, as I experienced new things, I didn't care as much and started to put less effort into it. It's really interesting how you start to spend that extra time with, like, swing dance and or other extracurriculars. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, there's so many different routes that you can take. And I think when you first go to software, it feels very limiting because of the fact that, like, you don't even have the ability to pick your other courses. I think over time, I started to recognize that there was more time that I could spend on things other than just my academics. And also, you know, like, I don't think, like, employers actually care as much about your grades as long as you're able to show that you can do the work.
Kind of wanted to talk a little bit about those co-op experiences, actually. One thing I noticed is that with your work history in particular, when it came to co-ops, you were very general in the beginning, and then you started to specialize into Android, especially your Android co-op at Pinterest. And I did ask previous interviewers about the choice of specializing versus generalizing in your co-ops. And given your experience, do you have like an opinion either way?
Yeah, so my personal perspective on this is that, especially in your co-ops, try to diversify as much as possible and try to take advantage of the fact that you have 4-month blocks where you can basically be anything you want. Like, you can switch from being a software engineer to being a PM, or you can dive into different realms in the tech stack in software as well. Or even just working at like a big tech company versus like a really small startup, that experience is entirely different, even if you're in the same type of stack. For me, I would say I did 1.5 co-ops in Android, actually. So one of them was at this tech company that is now acquired, but they were a consultancy agency that kind of like herded co-op engineers. Like, it was like 50 co-op engineers at the same time over a summer. And that was Extreme Labs. And part of it was that I got to develop Android, and it was just really cool. I built this app that was kind of meant to be a prototype, but we kind of like reverse engineered skimming a wallet or like skimming a credit card. So basically, you like put your phone next to your credit card, and then the like NFC chip would send off data. And then we would like, we wrote like a very basic prototype to like show that it works so that people can sign up to be with Extreme Labs. So I think that experience was just like really cool. And I think the feeling of being able to like touch something that I made, I just really enjoyed that experience. Yeah, that was like a focus for mine to like find a co-op term specifically in Android, because I thought that was really fun. And so I did it at Pinterest for 4 months. And yeah, it just ended up being like one of my favorite co-op terms. I think in general, the mobile team was very small and they were very tight-knit. So we kind of worked on a bunch of different features. And, you know, like there was long hours, but it felt fun still. And then after that, I was like, okay, well, let me not, I don't want to silo myself into this one technology. So I decided to do a full stack internship at Pinterest again. And that was on their ads team. And I got to see more of that and build out their test infrastructure. And then I also did a full stack co-op term at this education tech company called Clever after that. So I would say that, yeah, I didn't end up specifically going into Android, but after all my different experiences, I enjoyed my Android experience the most. So that's what I decided to focus on for full time.
Got it. I did want to unpack something that you mentioned there, which is like preventing yourself from being siloed into one particular function or domain. I know some people have an issue with this. How do you go about making yourself as diverse as possible in order to go into various domains of software engineering, while also being sure you have the skills to excel in any of those domains?
I think this is a really interesting question, because there's actually a lot of benefit to siloing yourself into one domain and becoming like an expert. For example, being an expert in Android has gotten me a lot of opportunities. And, you know, like I kind of get harassed by recruiters a lot because of the fact that I have seniority in this particular platform. But at the same time, now that I've done it for 4 years, I actually do feel the feeling of like, oh man, I'm super siloed into Android. It seems like everyone wants me to do Android and nothing else. So actually, one of the decisions that I made recently when I joined the startup that I work at right now, they're called Odeco. And I just was like, I don't want to do only Android. I want to be able to do more than that. And at this company, I've kind of been able to touch both iOS code and backend. Yeah, so I guess I diverted across your previous question, which is just like, do you specialize? Do you try to diversify? And my current thought is that I think, you know, you want to aim for like that T-shape experience where you have general knowledge in a lot of different technologies, but you probably want to have like a single specialty in something that kind of makes you stand out versus the rest. I think that something that I made a mistake on early on that I think a lot of students tend to make a mistake on is they try to put like every single language that they've heard of on their resume. It's like, yes, I wrote like assignment in this like obscure language, but I don't really know how to use it, but I'm going to put it on my resume anyway. That's actually not ideal because, yeah, like a lot of people want to know that you're able to have the ability to get started right away and you have like some ground point to be able to be successful at the internship or at the job that they're posting about. And so it's better for you to just have like a better foundation about that topic than something that's more surface level. I also think that this is very different depending on the company that you're at and what you really want. So
let's now fast forward. You've graduated SC. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you had joined Pinterest full-time as an Android engineer. Compared to your co-ops though, how was the full-time grind? And for like the SC 2021 graduates for this year, like what kind of advice would you give them as they enter industry?
I think I would say that my mentality around work has shifted a lot since I've been in the industry for 4 or 5 years full time now. I think one of the easiest mistakes that you can make is to try to work as hard as possible because you are afraid of coming off like an experience or that you're not putting enough work because everyone else seems to be more knowledgeable in a topic. It's a very easy way to burn out. So yeah, I think I would definitely recommend trying to make sure that there is some amount of balance in your life. I think it's especially hard now because of the fact that we're all working remote. You can kind of just be on your laptop any time of the day and be working. And yeah, I think it's important to try to define some amount of boundaries.
So what are some of the strategies that you employed when you were first in Pinterest when you were trying to prevent burnout?
I think that I definitely got lucky in terms of my team because my team wasn't the type of team that pushed me to work like extreme amounts of hours. And I think also just being able to be vulnerable with the people like either my mentor or my manager and just being like, hey, like, I'm not sure if I'm doing enough. Like, what are your thoughts on that? I think that requires like an empathetic and good manager, basically, to be able to respond well to that. But usually you can get like a good gut check of like, okay, like, am I on the right track? Do I really need to be pulling in more hours? Or is it mostly just like my own insecurity pulling me to work longer?
And yeah, you mentioned one thing that I was curious about, which is like the importance of having an empathetic manager or mentor. What kind of tips do you have in terms of developing a really strong mentorship relation with your manager and mentor? I'm curious because our previous guest talked a lot about mentorship, and I was curious about your thoughts on that as well.
I think trying to make sure that when you're interviewing for a company, if you're going directly into a team or if it's like Facebook where you get to kind of choose your team after, making sure that you have like a good gel with the manager is really important. I think that's like a huge aspect of like how I think about interviewing now, which is that, you know, my manager is going to be one of the most important people during my work experience. And I want to make sure that they're on the same page as I am in terms of like what I want in terms of growth and how I communicate with them and that I feel comfortable communicating with them. I think that outside of that, I started to learn this more after experiencing many managers versus being able to know exactly what I wanted with the first one.
Yeah, I've come to realize that it seems as if the relationships at work is sometimes equal or if not more important than the actual work that you may be doing on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And I would actually offer this as advice, which is that, you know, I think a lot of people in software emphasize on like learning the correct tech or like doing things the correct way or figuring out which tools that you should be using and making sure that you use those. But I think that communication and relationship building is just as important as learning the right technologies. And also, yeah, like I don't think you necessarily have to learn all the correct technologies at first. Like it's a learning process.
There was one part there that you mentioned about like communication, which is really interesting. I wanted to tie this in as well, which is the work that you've done for DroidCon and the talks that you've gave there. For the listeners who may not know, DroidCon is basically one of the largest Android developer conferences, and Alice actually got to speak at a couple of those. So Alice, what was that experience like for you, and why did you decide to give talks at DroidCon?
Yeah, honestly, I didn't actually end up deciding to. It was kind of the thing that happened on a whim because a coworker of mine decided to apply, and she told me about it basically the day that the talks were due, and she was like, you should come up with something too. And I literally came up with something in 15 minutes, submitted it, never thought about it. And then I got an email like several months later asking me to go give this talk. And yeah, this was like DroidCon London, I think. So like first talk was an international talk. So it was very exciting and also very stressful. I ended up like spending basically my weekends before that talk stressing out and like trying to make this talk perfect. And I'm also pretty like afraid of public speaking as well. So there were all these like different aspects that I was trying to manage. But the experience was really cool because of the fact that I started to realize that the only thing that differentiated me from being a speaker versus someone who's attending is the fact that I decided to do it. And, you know, I thought that I had something that people might think would be cool to learn. And it didn't mean that I needed to be the only expert in this field. It didn't mean that, you know, I needed to be the smartest person or like the person who had the most knowledge about this one topic that I was talking about. I think I had lots of people in my audience that actually knew more about the topic than I did. But that didn't actually prevent me from giving the talk, you know. And I think that DroidCon tries to be as supportive as possible for first-time speakers as well. So yeah, it was like a pretty cool experience overall.
Oh, interesting. Curious, what did you talk about?
Yeah, so this was actually based off of my experience at Pinterest, where we were doing like a complete re-architecture of the app. And one of my tech leads was like talking about poor programming paradigms and how like we need to like refactor these aspects. And I was really connected on this topic, and I just ended up writing the entire talk basically on poor programming paradigms on Android.
Oh, what kind of paradigms do you see that are really bad? Is it like, is the paradigm bad if you were taking it from, say, a regular language that is more useful for like web app development and then try to kind of put that into Android development? Or is there like, you need to have like specialized Android practices?
Yeah, it wasn't around framework or like language decisions, but more around using something called the solid paradigm, which is kind of to make sure that there's abstractions between code and like why it is that you might want to do that. And a thing that was a very difficult thing 4 or 5 years ago on Android is the fact that like none of the code was really that testable. And during that time, there was this like huge push towards moving mobile architecture to be like MVP, MVVM paradigm, which is like a more testable architecture. So yeah, that was kind of the crux of my talk, which is just talking about like how to write good architecture for your code and what like parts of the code you should try to avoid.
So I know in 2018, you moved to Patreon and you became one of their engineering team leads. What was that transition like though, from like an individual contributor at Pinterest to more of a senior engineer at Patreon? And also balancing the fact that Patreon was growing pretty fast at that time. What was that like for you?
Yeah, so I didn't specifically join as a team lead. I joined as a software engineer. But over time, I think that I tend to enjoy coordination. And I think I have like a good eye for seeing when something is not going well because of communication reasons or like coordination reasons. So I think that's like a big reason why I often end up in a team lead role. But yeah, I think for me, I really wanted to switch to Patreon because of the fact that I really believed in their mission. And you know, like you already know that I have an art background. So it was like a really good fit in terms of their mission and the fact that like we were helping artists and helping creators make money.
I'm curious though, you did mention that you had like the ability to see whether a team was floundering because of communication issues. Like during your time at Patreon or Pinterest or your other experiences at startups, what were some of the things that you noticed in teams that really drove them to be like an amazing team that could push out a lot of good output versus say a team that was more dysfunctional? Like what were some of those traits that you noticed?
Yeah, that's a really interesting one to answer. I think that a lot of dysfunctional teams tend to be like more siloed in terms of what they're working on, and there isn't as much communication between the teammates. I'm trying to think, like, for example, in my most recent experience at the company Odeco, one of the things that I'm noticing now is that we work on a feature and that there isn't enough coordination to make sure that we work on the feature at the same time. And there isn't enough coordination to make sure that there are enough resources on certain platforms to make sure that we're able to ship it at the same time. So yeah, I think a lot of it is kind of like more nuanced based off of what the actual situation is. But yeah, I think a lot of things can be solved with better communication versus just, I guess, grinding and working harder.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that because one of the most hated aspects of SE is the fact that we have to do communication requirements like English and like speaking. And it's interesting because past three guests have all mentioned how important communication is, especially in industry. So
yeah, it's funny because I actually am not like an English, like I don't love those requirements either. But yeah, somehow I've started writing a lot more docs and making sure that the community, I think a part of it is just the fact that like I get so annoyed when things don't go smoothly and people aren't as efficient as they could be, so I'm just like, let me just do it.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, another interesting path. So like you had completed like a year or so or more of Patreon, and then you suddenly decided to switch into independent consulting, and now you're at a startup. Why did you make that transition? And how was that transition like for you?
Yeah, I think that a lot of things that I did were kind of, I guess, pre-COVID in a way. I decided to leave Patreon because I was like, oh, it would be really cool to like focus on art a little bit more and on traveling and getting to experience that. And then when COVID hit, I was like, okay, well, let me try like consulting, because that seems like something that people are looking for right now. And I ended up consulting for a seed stage startup and building out their Android app. And from that experience, I realized that I'd never worked for like a really small company before. And I was like, you know, honestly, I think I feel pretty ready for this. Like, I think that a lot of working for like a small tech company intimidated me when I was younger. And now I'm like, this is cool. Like, I get to like touch a lot more parts of the company than I would if I were at like a big tech company specializing in something. So yeah, that's kind of what caused me to decide to join the company that I'm at now.
Uh-huh. I'm curious though, you mentioned that you were intimidated by joining a small company. What got you intimidated by it?
Yeah, to be honest, I think that I really appreciated mentorship when I first started in tech. I think that having someone kind of guide me and tell me what the like right things were to do, or like if I had any like concerns around my performance, just having someone to kind of help me with that was really beneficial. And that's like a big reason why I decided to join Pinterest. And as I guess, became more senior, I felt a lot more comfortable going to smaller companies and not having that direct mentorship.
And I wanted to kind of move away from the career questions. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the other passions that you work on, which I think are really interesting. The first one was your blog, Alice in Techland, where you're drawing comics about tech and some of the problems that we're facing in the industry. What inspired you to tackle these problems in a comic medium?
Yeah, I mostly just wanted a way to have a creative outlet, and tech was like very close to me, so it was the easiest thing that I could think of to draw about. And one of the like first comics that I made ended up getting more viral because of the fact that I had like coworkers at Patreon who like helped me surface it and stuff like that. So yeah, I think like part of it is just like being able to express these emotions about being in the tech industry. It's not always like sunny, like rainbows kind of thing. There are like tough situations as well. And I think especially being a woman in tech, I definitely feel that more. And I want to make sure that people have a way to be able to see those kind of experiences as well.
Do you want to actually talk a little bit about some of those tough issues? I'm sure that many of us don't really understand the full scale of it since we are all still in school, especially in terms of like misconceptions that we have with like diversity or other issues that you've seen in the tech industry. So I was curious if you could talk a little bit about what you've seen.
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of this has changed so drastically with the fact that we're talking about diversity more, and that people are calling people out and companies out more around the fact that they're not paying attention to diversity. But for me, I think it is this acknowledgement that everyone grows up with privilege, and depending on, you know, your race, your sex, like all these different attributes, your family's income level, your privilege might be higher than someone else's. And so there is a lot of, I guess, like nonprofits and companies who, like, for example, Google or like Facebook, who have more resources, who recognize this and are willing to put in the effort to do affirmative action in order to correct that, well, not correct, but offer a little bit more privilege to people who don't have as much. So yeah, I think that this action is actually quite controversial because of the fact that there are people who are like, well, you know, like, I don't get this, like, I guess, I don't get like a program because of my race, or like, I don't get a program because of my sex. And yeah, I wish that people realize that like they're still getting privilege in some way. It's just more invisible.
Mm-hmm. it's a very thorny issue in tech, especially.
Yeah, for sure.
We are known as like an industry that is a little bit more meritocratic, but it's still hard to see there are some issues that we do have to tackle.
Yeah, and that's like a big reason why I love working with CodePath, which you mentioned that I am involved in. Like CodePath is a way to, I guess, make it so that software as an education is both as up-to-date as possible and as accessible as possible to all students. And yeah, like a lot of students don't have the ability to become software engineers because of the fact that they go to a school that doesn't offer that kind of education, or that they don't offer it in a way that allows them to convert to like a full-time engineer.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to talk about your experience at CodePath. What has it been like being now a teacher of software engineering rather than a student? And like, have you noticed these particular things that we should pay attention to as we learn software engineering?
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot that I have around this specific topic. I think the biggest lesson that I've learned from this is how to explain concepts. And it's actually very hard to make a concept so easy to explain and understand that someone who's just starting off can understand it. And yeah, a lot of the times when I teach the Android course, it's around like trying to come up with like analogies to real life that they've already like seen before, or like trying to tie it to something that people have already experienced before. And I really love it. I think that it makes me a better engineer as well, because being able to explain a concept, like, for example, as you become more senior as an engineer, you're going to have to start taking opinions and like having opinions on what to do about something. So it's like, I think we should like decide to use this framework, or I think we should decide to use this language, or like this technology, or whatever it is. And you have to be able to concisely explain why it is that we should do this specific thing. And it involves explaining it both to engineers and oftentimes to people who are non-technical as well. So yeah, I think that learning how to teach has actually made me a much better engineer and a much better communicator in terms of being able to explain my thought process.
Well, we are coming to the end of the podcast, so I always like to ask this question to our alumni, which is, if you were to travel back in time to when you were in your third or fourth year of SE, what would be like the three pieces of advice you would give to a younger version of Alice?
Yeah, so I think that some of these advice are like much more relevant to me now, which is, I think, to compare yourself less to others. Especially when I was starting off in like software, where like you're surrounded by people who are extremely smart, right? Like I was like maybe like one of the top people in my class in high school, but now I'm like surrounded by people who are all the top people in their classes. And that's very intimidating. And there's that feeling of like, oh my gosh, like, what kind of grade are they getting? Like, what kind of internships are they getting? Like, am I doing as well as everyone else? And that feeling of like social comparison is very strong. And I kind of realized that it was getting the best of me, where I was making a lot of my decisions based off of what everyone else was doing rather than trying to, you know, listen to what I actually want and try to figure out like what it is that I value. So yeah, I think a lot of my advice to people who are younger is to one, compare yourself less to others, and two, try to figure out, you know, what your own passions are, and make that the goal rather than making what you think you should be doing the goal.
Got it. Yeah, I think those are like very, very important pieces of advice that we should also listen to. Yeah, I think like a lot of people face that issue with like comparing to others. So it's awesome that you mentioned that. Well, yeah, that concludes our podcast. Alice, thank you for being on the session. I think this is really important advice and really interesting stories that you brought up about your time as an engineer, as well as helping out with CodePath and your time at Allison Techland. For people that may want to reach out to you later on, how can they reach out?
Yeah, so you can reach out to me via Instagram. I'm at alice.in.techland. Twitter, which is names_Alice, or LinkedIn, which is Alice Nguyen.
Well, thank you so much, Alice, and see everyone next time on Sessions by SE.